Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In the Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. 3 times a month, we bring you the authors with the most flaming pens in the literary arena, the publishers dedicated to producing the hottest books, and industry professionals who are sure to take your books to the next level. Today's featured guests are authors Adrienne Thompson and Lori Titus. Adrienne, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yes, it's my pleasure. So we'll go ahead and jump right on in. So why don't you tell us about your latest book, After the Pain? And I love that title, by the way.
Thank you. After the Pain is book one in a new series that I started. It was published earlier this month, and it is the Latter Rain series. And it's a series, it's a trilogy of books centering around women over 40 finding love. So,
And, I love that, yes.
Yeah, I noticed that, well, I'm over 40, and I noticed that the vast majority of my readers are too. So I thought, you know, and I'm single, so, and a lot of my friends are, and we're over 40. So I thought, you know, it would be good to kind of spotlight older women finding love as a possibility. Because we're not all done. So
certainly hope not.
Because
I'm 40 myself, so yes.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of us still want love. We still want, you know, the happiness and everything. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, so often we see, you know, the demographics in the books being the same. You know, they're all in their 20s. They all look a certain kind of way, you know. And so I love that you are stepping outside of, you know, the norm and just, you know, writing other stories, because we all have a story to tell. And absolutely,
yeah,
you know, there's life past 40. I certainly hope so, because I'm right there. So
And I wanted the book covers to reflect women that look like real women, you know, that type of thing too. So
that's awesome. Is this your first series or first book where you have characters that are older? Excuse me.
Not necessarily. My book, See Me, that heroine is, I think she's right at 40. And I have some that are like 38, 37. So usually they're in line with wherever age I am when I write it. Some of the other books, I think the youngest for like a romance would be in my Been So Long series, where kind of a prequel goes back to her college days.
Okay.
So, but that kind of was dictated by the fact that it was a prequel to the novel.
Okay.
But I don't write many about young romance because that's just not where I am. So I kind of, you know, write what you know. So what I know now is a woman 30s and 40s, you know, traveling through life.
Okay. So other than, you know, wanting to, you know, represent an older age group, what was your other inspiration for writing this story?
Just this one in particular highlights depression. And so when I write a book, I do have an intentional subject that I want to touch on. And this was the my intention was to highlight depression, because mental illness is something that's not really talked about in the African American community. So, and it is just as much illness as diabetes or hypertension, and it needs to be addressed and taken care of. So, and I have a history of depression in my family and myself. So it's something I know well. So, I just wanted to kind of highlight it, and everything I write takes you on a journey of from brokenness to healing. So this is no different from that. So that was my main goal.
Okay, that sounds good. Excuse me. So what would you say are 3 primary messages that you'd like to have the reader take away from this story? Excuse me.
Messages that depression is real. That love is real, and that you don't have to be perfect to deserve love.
Oh, that's because, you know what? That is so awesome.
Yeah,
you know, we see so many
people.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Well, I guess you might have to stop me because I can talk. But I think a lot of times we have all these images in the media of what a woman is supposed to look like and what she's supposed to be and what, you know, the kind of woman a man should pursue. And I just, you know, that's not always the case. There are different types of beauty. And
that's right.
In every book, the man may think this woman is beautiful, but it might not be your idea of what beautiful is. So
that's
what I try to show, that, you know, there's someone for everyone. And it's not always, you know, you don't have to look a certain way or be a certain way or even be totally, I won't say not in your right mind, but you could be broken and someone see that and just want to love that part of you and want to help you, you know.
I love that, and I love that you are willing to tackle those messages. I feel some kind of way about that all the time, you know, and not only do we see, you know, that we're being fed these images all the time of what you're supposed to look like, you know, but then we see, you know, a whole generation of women trying to transform themselves to become that, and when they can't measure up, you know, it affecting their self-esteem and, you know, and all of that. And so I'm really glad that you are willing to address those issues and say, hey, you know, right where you are is right where you need to be for now. And it's okay.
Yeah.
You're more than enough. So that is
enough.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're somebody's dream.
So,
that's my overall message in every book, is you're somebody's dream. You may not have met him yet, but you're somebody's dream. So.
Mm-hmm. That is so beautiful. I love that.
Thank you.
And you said that book released this month?
Yeah, it released on the 12th of January, and
okay.
Book two will release the 16th of February. So I wrote I wrote them all in a 5-week period, it's 3 books in all, and I wrote one like 10 days before NaNoWriMo month in November, then I wrote the other two during NaNoWriMo month. So I wrote them all intentional. This is my first intentional series. I have other series.
Okay.
That were not supposed to be series, but I wrote them, and then people wanted to read more about the characters, so I kept writing. But this is the first time I actually planned a series, and we have it's about 3 different heroines. It's not the same person in, as the main character in all 3 books, but all 3 ladies are in all 3 books, if that makes sense. It's a kind of an overarching story. So I'm excited about it because, like I said, I've never planned a series before.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've been seeing your work, but I haven't actually had a chance to read any of it. But I believe that, you know. Now, are these complete novels or are they novellas or what?
They're novellas. They're short novels.
Okay.
And I did that on purpose, too. I wanted them to be short because I kind of wanted to just kind of highlight the love story. You know, with a novel, a lot of other stuff has to go into it. You have all these subplots
things
like that. And they do have subplots, but it's not, you know, not as engrossed as a full novel would be. And I also wanted to be able to just bang them out back to back to back. And if I had written 3 full novels, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Okay. So what genres do you currently write?
Okay. I write mostly what I'm known for, I'll say, is inspirational romance, edgy inspirational romance, and interracial romance. But the thing with me is I kind of go where the story tells me to go. So I do also have African-American fiction. My novel Home is written from a male's perspective. It's not a romance. So it's just African-American fiction. I have a couple of historical fiction. I have a poetry book that's available. I have a devotional, a short devotional. So and I'm a part of a nonfiction anthology. So I'm a purist when it comes to creativity, so wherever the story takes me, I go. Probably would make more money if I didn't do that. You know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I write whatever comes to me, and whatever genre it falls into.
Okay, so why don't you tell us your titles, all of your titles, and then you can tell us a little bit about each one, you know, because there's some, just like, you know, there's a person out there for everyone who's looking for you. There's someone out there who's looking for each one of your works, too. So let's talk about that.
All right. Well, I will go through series because I have 22 books right now. So,
oh, really? But, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
22 that I've self-published. I started in 2011. But I have the Blue State series. The Blue State series follows a blues singer who is from rural Arkansas. And There are four books in that series. The fourth book actually follows her niece, who is on the run with her boyfriend in Mexico. So it kind of follows the blues singer's trials and her relationship with her boyfriend, ex-husband. It's a lot of drama. But it's usually, I've had a lot of people tell me that first book, Blues Day, was my very first novel. So a lot of people tell me that it's their absolute favorite book because it kind of got a down-home feeling to it. Set in the country, a lot of country stuff going on because I have a lot of relatives in the country. And then the Ben Salone series, Ben Salone was my second novel. It is a 7-book series. It is the most, Ben Salone is one of the most popular books.
Okay.
It's a love triangle between a black woman, a Pakistani doctor who's married, and her ex-boyfriend who's African American, and her two sons. And it's a big web going on between all of those. So, the series follows them, also follows her sister, who was a runaway, and then her mother, who kind of, the book September ties everything together because the mother's dysfunction explains everybody else's dysfunction.
Okay.
Then there's the Your Love is King series, which are both interracial, black woman, white man, and then Better, the second book is black woman, Native American man. And just follows my formula of broken women finding love. Ain't Nobody series is Woman and the Brazilian Man, a woman whose biological clock is ticking. She wants a husband, and she makes some kind of dire decisions to get a baby. And so that's what that is. And then there's Home, which is the one I told you about from the male perspective. It's a standalone. Summertime is a standalone. It is set partially in 1939.
Okay.
And it has a big musical thing. Dizzy Gillespie is one of the characters. Trying to think of what else I have. Of course, a Latter Rain series, After the Pain, and then No Pain, No Gain, will be releasing on the 16th of February, like I said. When You've Been Blessed, Feels Like Heaven is my only very almost to the formula Christian fiction book. It is a romance,
okay.
But it's it's probably has the biggest religious theme.
Okay.
See Me is a very edgy novel, deals with a lot of abuse, a little sadomasochism. It's kind of deep. See Me. But it's very popular. People, it leaves a big impact on people. So I had one person tell me that they actually looked up, Googled one of the characters because they thought he was real. I said, well, no, I made him up. So. But, you know, that's a compliment. I'll accept.
Yes, it is.
And I don't think I'm missing anything. Just Between Us is an anthology I'm a part of. It's absolutely free on all electronic platforms. So anybody, feel free to download it. 7 Days of Change is the flash devotional, and then my poetry book is Poetry from the Soul, For the Soul. I have 2 volumes of that. There's 1 free volume on my website.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm going to switch gears. Pardon me?
I said, I think I covered everything.
Okay. So I'm going to switch gears just a bit here. So you have been a teenage mother, but you didn't get stuck there. And so how were you able to rise above that station in life? Did you have a solid support system?
Definitely. I had parents that they had been telling me, it had been grilled into me that I was going to go to college from probably the time I could walk. So my parents were very successful. My father's a musician. My mother's a teacher. So there was no other way for me to go. I knew I had to.
Gotcha.
And
my
father pretty much told me, I'll help you, but you got to go to school. And I said, okay. So, I married early and all that stuff, but I went to college. I knew that's something I had to do. It was never an option for me. And and then my children drove me to want to do good things because I wanted to be able to take care of them after my divorce. So, They still drive me. They're all grown, but they still drive me because now I'm trying to leave a legacy for them. So, and hopefully,
yes, that's beautiful.
Hopefully somebody will take over the reins if anything happens to me.
No, that's awesome. We see so much. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I was never told that just because I had a baby that there was anything I couldn't do. They never let me use that as an excuse.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So that takes me right into my next question, because we do see a lot of teenage parents and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, I'm the result of one. But my mother had that same kind of thing that you have. You know, she just she was tenacious and she was going to make it. Period.
Yeah.
And she did. But what would you say to another teenage mother who has either dreams of being more and doesn't know how she'll make it, or who feels that this is all she'll ever be and doesn't know how to put herself on a different track? What would you say to those two teenagers?
I would tell them, number one, pray, stay close to your higher power, believe in yourself, and just don't give up, because it's not going to be easy. I would never tell anybody anything was easy. It was hard when I had my child at 15. It was hard when I got married at 16. It's hard when I got divorced at 24. And when I got divorced, I had a 6-week-old child when we separated. So, none of it came easy for me. But I will tell you right now, all of them are grown. I have an 18-year-old in college. My son, my 25-year-old son, is in graduate school. He's a professor at 25. So, my oldest child, my daughter's 27, married with two kids, and she's in grad school. And I'm not going to say I did it totally by myself, because I had God, but daddy didn't help. Daddy didn't help. If anything had to be bought, I had to buy it. Somebody had to go to practice, I had to take them. If somebody had to have homework, I had to do it. He was not physically there, but I survived, and so did my kids. And I, I'm proud to say I have a 25-year-old son that's never been arrested for anything. You know, I have good kids. So it can be done. It's hard. You probably will cry many a night. You'll feel lonely. But one day you will look up, and I never forget my aunt saying this. One day you'll look up, the pain will be gone, the struggle will be over, and you can't even tell anybody when it happened. It's just gone. One day, I was just able to take a deep breath and say, okay, I did it. You know, it's done. It's done, and now I can pursue my own dreams. Biggest thing I tell you is, don't hang your dreams on your kids. Don't do that to them. Have your own. Let them have theirs, and you have your own. You never get too old to have your own. I'm a grandmother, too, but I've got dreams, and I'm not going to stop until I reach them. So, have your own dreams, your own life, but do what you got to do. Take care of your kids. Show them what a real woman is. You know, be a good example for them, and just hold on. You know, I won't lie to you and say it's easy. It's not, but just hold on and don't give up.
That's awesome. Now, it seems like you had, great role models and stuff around you, and we know that some of these girls don't really have that. But I am a firm believer that, that everything we need is kind of on our life's path, just waiting on us to get there. So, it may not come from somebody in your family, but somebody will rise up and take you under their wings. So just keep on going,
I didn't have – my parents were good to me, but those were my kids. My mother told me that from day one. She said, that's your baby. At 15, she said, I'm not keeping it. I couldn't go to a ball game. I couldn't go to a She said, that's your baby. You're going to have to take care of your baby. So, and I appreciate that now. I was a little upset then. But I appreciate that now, because, I know my children. We have a relationship. And I would rather have been the one that did the raising than anybody else. So
absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is so powerful. I love that testimony,
testimony.
So, at some point on the journey, you went to school and you became a registered nurse, so congratulations on that accomplishment. How did you choose that profession, or did it choose you?
Well, I started off, I have a degree in biology because I thought I was going to go to medical school. And actually got in medical school, but I was married at the time, my kids were little, and I knew what my father's life was, and I didn't want that for my kids. They needed a mother. And to me, it was more important to be their mother than to be a doctor. So after my divorce, I just needed, I'm going to be honest with you, I need some job security, and there wasn't any in biology. And I said, well, I'm going to go to nursing school and get me a job, and that's what I did. One day, I can learn. I'm an easy learner. So I knew if they taught me, I would learn it, and I could be a nurse. So that's what I did. And I did it for 12 years before quitting to write full-time.
So when did you know that you wanted to be an author? You know, tell us about that part of your journey.
I can't be – I'm not like other people who knew from the time they came out of the womb. I really didn't. I knew that I loved to read. I knew that I could easily make up verbal stories. I embellished stuff a lot. I guess I was always sort of an entertainer. And I was always very good at writing. My English teachers always raved about it. I wrote poetry for years. I didn't write my first novel until 2009. But honestly, 2009 is when I decided, man, maybe I can do this, you know. And I just kept writing. Yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to be till like when I grew up until 2009. So that's what I decided.
Okay. So, you know, that's being able to write full time is the is the goal of many writers, and you've done that. So why don't you tell us about your transition into becoming a full time writer? And that's an awesome accomplishment, by the way. So proud of you.
Yeah, thank you. It actually happened quicker than I realized at the time, because I published my first book July 2011, and I quit my job November 2012. It seemed longer than that when it was happening, but I can honestly say I didn't have a big fat bank account. I was not sure it would work out. I wasn't making a lot of money every month, but I knew that I was unhappy on that job, and I had prayed and prayed and prayed, and I felt led to just quit. And I believed that if I did step out on faith, I wouldn't fall, and I haven't fallen. It's been 3 years now.
Okay. It hasn't been
3 years. It hasn't been a walk in the park. There've been ups and downs. Publishing is feast or famine type business, so I try to enjoy the feast and save up for the famine. that's what I try to do. But I'm not jet setting. I can't travel everywhere. I mean, I'm not making a lot of money, but I can honestly tell you, I'm happier than I have been in my life right now. And
that is so awesome.
Yeah, I'm not making RN money, but I was miserable when I was making RN money. So I sat up one day and said, I'm making some decent money. I said, maybe if I really focus on it, I can make more. And I do, you know. So, but I can tell you the way I got here was I had laser focus. I treated writing like a full-time job before it ever was. And I really do think that's the key. I don't think you can do this. I know it sounds crazy because I had a full-time job and I was a single mother when I first started publishing, but you can't treat it like a side hustle and expect it to become full-time, because that's just not – usually that doesn't happen. So you get out of it what you put into it. So if you devote the time to it, you get up in the middle of the night and write, if you do your promo, if you're consistent with those things, despite the fact that you have other responsibilities, I think you'll reap the benefits. At least that's my experience.
How do you keep your work, you know, in front of an audience, you know, to keep the sales and stuff coming in? You know, I hear it so often, and I know even with myself, I struggle with this. I knew writing, but I didn't know marketing, and that's something I've been learning as I've been kind of going along. But so many authors are caught up in that, like, you know, where do I go next? Okay, the book's out. How do I do this?
Yeah.
You know, so how do you do that? How do you handle the marketing piece for yourself?
No, I was just talking to my oldest daughter before this call. But I need to make a checklist of all the stuff I do. So I really need to make a checklist and share it. But, I mean, I blog. I do my sample Sundays before it's ever out. I do my cover reveals. I guest blog. I go into different groups on Facebook and post. I have a newsletter. I tweet. I live on Facebook. You already see that. I like Facebook, though. So it doesn't feel like work. I enjoy it. But, things like this, the blog talk, radio shows. I do a lot of in-person stuff. I do a lot of Skype discussions. If you ask me to discuss, and if I can't get to you, I will Skype you in a hot second. I don't turn down much, to be honest with you. I don't turn down much of anything. So I try to do every little thing. And there are people, here's the problem. There are people that don't have to do all of that. So I know authors see that. They see people that all they have to do is get on their Facebook page and say, hey, I published a book, and 10,000 people go buy it. But that's not all about journey. So we
that's
can't
true.
Look at that and decide that that's what we should do. It's not going to work for everybody. If you don't, I always say, I'm not going to spend all this money on editing and book covers and stuff, not open my mouth and tell people I wrote a book. That's not in me. The only way... My motto is, if I fail, it will not be because I did not try my best to succeed. So I'm going to do my part. I trust the good Lord to do his part, but I'm definitely going to do my part. And but the number one thing I can tell you to do to sell a book is to write another book and to do it well. And it's not to toot my own horn, but you got to give people something to want to buy. So I write what I would want to read, and I try to, and I'm really mm-hmm. serious about quality. I'm really serious about editing and book
yeah.
covers and things looking professional. Because
yeah.
I'll be honest, there's plenty of stuff I don't buy because I look at it and go, mm-mm, nope.
That's right.
Might be a great book inside, but you have to be serious
mm-hmm.
about all of that. And if you can't, if you don't have the time or the money to invest in it, if you can't barter with somebody to get it
mm-hmm.
right, then I'll say wait. Just wait. Save
That's
up.
Right.
Just wait until you can. But if you're gonna do it, you can't go into it halfway. You have to.
That's right.
Like I say, word of mouth is number one, but you got to start with your mouth. So if you don't
mm-hmm.
tell people, I can't tell you how many Facebook friends I have. I have to have a book. I'm like, you got a book? Not once have I seen them post about it.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I don't
yeah.
get that rationale because if I'm going to put the money into it, I'm definitely going to put the effort behind it. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you just have to have a plan. Have a plan before. It doesn't have to involve a lot of money. Marketing doesn't have to be
mm-hmm.
a lot of money. But you do have to
mm-hmm.
put the time. You have to be consistent. You know, you can't
okay.
market Monday and then don't go back to the end of the month and market again. It's just not
right.
going to work, you know. How many times do you see a commercial before you decide to buy something? You know,
exactly.
so
mm-hmm.
yeah.
That is awesome. That's great advice. And and obviously it's working because you know you are living this dream full time. So that in itself
yeah.
is such an inspiration, you know, for so many of
mm-hmm.
us. So
okay.
that's awesome.
Thank
so
you.
Who are some of your favorite authors?
I have a lot of indie authors that I read now. I love Nikia
mm-hmm.
LaShaw. I love her work. Barbara Jo Williams, who is also a good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
I used to be a big James Patterson fan. He's kind of falling off for me now. But
okay.
I like the Alice Cross books, so sometimes I'll listen to her read those. I love Terry McMillan. Huge Bernice
mm-hmm.
McFadden fan.
Okay.
I used to really love Mary Higgins Clark. I haven't read her in a while, but I mentioned the ones I don't read now because I realize all of them shape what I write now. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
you are what you read. So
mm-hmm.
you write what you read, basically.
Okay.
Growing up, I read a lot of Sweet Valley High, Sweet Dreams romances.
Mm-hmm.
After I got grown, I moved on to, like, the Dafina books and Arabesque books.
Okay.
I don't read a lot of romance now, but that is the backbone of what I write because I read
mm-hmm.
tons of them earlier. But
gotcha.
I'm a pretty moody reader, though, so it depends on what
uh-huh.
I'm in the mood
okay.
for. I'm in the mood for poetry right now, so I'm reading a lot of poetry. I love Langston Hughes.
Uh-huh.
And I also like to read a lot of, like, 1920s Harlem Renaissance fiction, African-American
mm-hmm.
authors.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Basically, anything that holds my attention, I'll read
mm-hmm.
it. But that's a tall order, though, because I have a little mild ADD. So
okay.
You have really got to work to catch my attention that holds it.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right. So just randomly, three of your favorite books.
Number one would be The Color Purple.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is a great story.
Yeah. Love The Color Purple. Color Purple changed
mm-hmm.
my idea of what a book could be. So, love it.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, well, I should have said number one, the Bible. We're just going to automatically say the Bible and not put it in the top three because I read it every
mm-hmm.
day. I read some of it every day.
Okay.
Yeah. Number two would probably be, I really love the Hunger Games trilogy. So, I would
okay.
love all three into number two.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. Number three. I don't know. There's so many. I've read so many really, really good books. I don't know. I don't know if I have a number three.
Okay.
That series and Color Purple are two that I know I can read over and over again. That's why I put them
mm-hmm.
in. I don't know. And I'm not a read over and over again type person. I don't know if there's anything else I'd be willing to do that for.
Okay. Wow, that's powerful though. But you said that you know that book changed how you were able to see writing, and
yeah.
I mean that is such a powerful compliment, you know. And have you written her and told her that? She probably would love to hear that, you know.
No,
I really should. Yeah, you should because that was like wow, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an awesome
yeah.
compliment. I kind of felt that way about. I know how the caged bird sings, and I
yeah.
was in elementary school when I read that for the first time, and it changed some stuff for me. So, yes, I totally can relate to that statement. You know,
yeah.
I think that's
yeah.
so powerful.
That's a favorite
so,
of a lot of people.
Yeah. Can you tell us a few random facts about yourself?
Let's see. music fanatic. Anybody that's read my book knows that, because every book has a soundtrack. The chapter titles are song titles, and so the table contents of the soundtrack. Most of the books have a song title for the title, like After the Pain is a Betty Wright song. And in that same vein, I am a Michael Jackson fan and a Journey fan, like really crazy type fan. I love independent films. I really want to make a documentary. Nobody knows. This is the first time I've said that publicly. But I would love to be a filmmaker and make a documentary.
Awesome.
Let's see. I'm a doting grandmother. I really am. I spoil my grandbabies.
Aww.
Of course, I'm a young, hip grandmother, but I'm a doting one. I love them to death. I think, what else? I'm pretty boring. It's going to be hard to. I love to go to the movies, any movie, basically. I just love the experience of being in the theater and watching movies. And I love to travel. Of course, I'm a struggling artist right now. I do what I can, and hopefully everybody will catch on and not sell enough books to just travel at will. I want to be a nomad. I want to kind of like live one place for 3 months and move somewhere else. That's my dream. So.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have any events coming up where the readers can come out and meet you?
I don't think I have any events. I have an event I'm going to be a part of in my hometown in Arkansas. If anybody wants to come, March 12th, which is my birthday, they're having a little book signing thing, so I'll be signing books there. Also, I am a part of an anthology that is being published by Brown Girl Books. Sure you've heard of them. Rashada Day Billings. Murray's company, but it's called The X Chronicles. I have a story titled That's the Way Love Goes, keeping with my song title theme. It's a very interesting story. I think it's, you know, good, of course. And
if you do say so yourself, huh?
If I do say so myself, I think it's rather good. I enjoy my books. I actually read them. I sit and just read them over and over again. And I'm just turning pages like, I wonder what's going to happen next. And I know. I do. I'm proud. I would tell anybody. I'm very proud of what I've done. And I don't say that in a conceited way, because I believe the Lord gives me the stories. So I'm very happy that he chooses to use me for them. So I enjoy them.
Yeah.
I think I do good work. So I think other people will enjoy them too. But there are 20 authors in total on that project. It will be available for pre-order February 12th. It will be published on March 8th. So I'm proud to be a part of that. I'm excited about that.
Okay.
In addition to my book that's being published on the 16th. Then the third book will be published in March. So.
Okay.
I am a part of the Building Relationships Around Books retreat in October in Memphis. So I'm in Memphis. Yeah. So for 3 days, I'm one of the featured authors there.
Okay. All right. So please tell our listening audience how they may follow you on social media and where your books may be purchased.
All right. You can find me at adrianthompsonwrites.webs.com. You can go to the bottom of the homepage and you can find my Facebook link, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Pinterest. I'm everywhere. If you Google Adrian Thompson, I'm the only Adrian Thompson that's published a book. So my website should be the first thing that pops up. If you get on any social media and look up Adrian Thompson, I use the same picture for every profile, my smiling face. So once you see that smiling face on one, you'll know it on the other. My books are available on Amazon.com, Kobobooks.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Nook, Kindle, Kobo, and most of them are in paperback. The shorter ones are not in paperback right now, but the full-length ones are in paperback. And, of course, you can always email me. My email address is on the bio page of my other books page at my website. You can email me, and you can order signed copies directly from me anytime.
Gotcha.
And, feel free to follow me, friend me. I'm friendly. I like to connect with people.
Yes, you certainly are friendly. I certainly appreciate the connections, too. So in parting, what is one piece of advice that you would give to an aspiring author?
I think the number one thing I always try to tell people is trust your voice. Do not try to imitate anyone else. Don't worry about what the trends are. Vampires will not be popular after a while, so don't do that to yourself. Don't write something and that you put an expiration date on. Write within your heart, write from your voice. If it doesn't sound like everybody else's, that's all the better, because what I find is that people want something that's genuine, and they're looking for something that's different. So if you're imitating everybody else, you're not going to stand out. And I do believe that that's right. You know, so trust your voice, trust your instincts. Number one, believe in yourself, because I do believe that's why people won't promo their work, if they don't believe in it. So believe in yourself and believe in what you wrote, and believe that there's somebody out there that'll read it. Might not be a million people, but somebody will read it, and someone will enjoy it, and they will tell somebody else to read it. But you can't expect anybody to believe in something that you don't believe in yourself.
Very powerful words. Well, Adrienne, thank you so much for speaking with us today, and of course, keep us abreast of your future works. We certainly wish you much success on your journey.
Thank you. I sure appreciate being here.
Yes, thanks. Okay, so before we bring on the next guest, we'll hear a word from our sponsors.
All right.
Okay.
Scores of authors from across the nation will autograph books on Saturday, April 30th at the 7th Annual Dayton Book Expo. In addition to book signings, the Ohio-based event includes sessions for aspiring authors, a kids' zone, and a free journal for book lovers. For details, call 888-802-1802 or visit DaytonBookExpo.com. Dayton Book Expo, where book lovers connect.
If you are just tuning in, welcome to In the Spotlight. We've just interviewed author Adrienne Thompson, and I'd like to bring on our next guest, author Lori Titus. Lori, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's my pleasure. So you have a new release entitled The Bell House. Why don't you tell us about that story?
Well, The Bell House is a lot of things. Starts out with a young woman who has just recently been widowed, and her half-sister gets in touch with her and offers her to come live on the family property. The Bells actually have two houses on the property, and one of them's been willed to Jenna. So she decides to take her up on it, thinking, hey, this will be a different place for me, and I won't have to worry about buying a new house. And she goes there, and first you start off, you know, feeling sort of tension between these two sisters, and there's a very complicated family history between the two of them. But things get weird pretty soon, and you start to realize that this one little family is not the only thing that is alive and well on the property, even though it's not supposed to be that way.
Okay. So where did you get the inspiration for this story?
Well, you know, I was thinking about a lot of the stories that people tell within families. And, you know, one of the things that's been in the news recently is a lot of people have been going on some of these sites where they get their DNA tested and they, you know, try to find out what their past was and come to find out that their family's past is really not anything like what they've been told. So one of the main linchpins of the story is, you know, what actually really happened in the family's past and how those perceptions that we have of who our ancestors are. And I'm not even necessarily talking about ancestors that are very far back in the family, but let's just say, you know, things like what your aunt did when she was young or who your grandparents really were, things like that, that you're told certain things and then maybe those may not really be true. But yet we act on this impression of what these people in our lives supposedly were. And it even shapes us a little bit because we have these ideas of who we are and who we come from. So it's about that. It's also a lot about the idea of generational curses. I was raised Catholic myself, and the thing that's interesting is, like a lot of other Christians, they don't believe in generational curses. But attending Baptist churches and getting a little bit more into different parts of the religion, you hear a lot about it. And it struck me as a very interesting thing to write a story about, because not only is it something that people can relate to, but it's just a very interesting thing to think that the sins of the father being passed down into the children, and if those sins are passed on, then how does that affect people in their daily lives, and do they even realize it?
Okay, sounds interesting. Who would you say is the target audience for your work?
I would say anybody that really loves a good ghost story. Of
okay.
course, I'm looking to reach African-American audience because that's what
mm-hmm.
I am, but also
mm-hmm.
because the story does really touch upon a lot of the things that happened, particularly in the Southern past. Jenna
okay.
really looks into her history and, you know, what happened as far as how their family even, you know, got into North America. Slavery and different things are
mm-hmm.
revealed there that are, of course, sort of background issues
mm-hmm.
in the story, because the story is really set in modern day times, but you can see where the influence of some of these things changed their lives.
Okay. So in addition to writing as Lori Titus, you also write under a pseudonym. Please tell us about that.
Okay, well, I can tell you a little bit about it. I
okay.
Actually ghostwrite a series of romance novels. I cannot tell you what the name is because I have to kill
gotcha.
You right after.
Okay. Oh, my. You got to keep that to yourself, then.
That, yeah. But, I mean, the thing that has been great about it is I enjoy romance. It's sort of always been a sort of background element for me in all of the books that I've written because they've been horror. But writing under the pseudonym has allowed me to work with just drama and just romance and see how that works
mm-hmm.
out. So it's
okay.
been a fun thing for me, but also it's allowed me to write full time. So that's a big
oh, awesome.
Thing that I'm happy about.
Awesome. So, okay, what genres would you say your work falls under then? First of all, under Lori Titus, and then, I mean, we know that you're, what you're doing under your pseudonym is for romance, but let's talk about the Lori Titus brand.
Right. Well, let's see. Mostly horror. Some of it is
horror.
Paranormal.
Okay.
I have a series about a young girl named Meredith Ryder,
mm-hmm.
and she's a teenager, lives in Texas. She has what seems to be a very normal life. But pretty soon after you start reading, you find out that she actually has a lot of secrets that she hides. She has abilities that she can't let anyone know she has. And
mm-hmm.
though her parents have told her these things are inherited, she doesn't really know the background of exactly how it is that she and her family came to be different. So Hunting in Closed Spaces is the first story. And it's sort of her journey into finding out not only who she is as far as her powers are concerned, but also learning how to deal with them and handle them. She's
okay.
being pursued by a group called The Circle. And
mm-hmm.
they're very, you know, sort of shadow organization, and they have reasons that they want her. So there's
okay.
a lot of action and adventure in that as well.
Do you think that you will attempt any other genres under the Lori Titus brand?
I'm pretty sure that I will. At
mm-hmm.
this point, I am centered on continuing the Meredith series. I also
okay.
have works in progress under my own name that I've put
mm-hmm.
aside for just a little bit while it gets edited. But
okay.
that one's also horror genre, too. But I do expect it to keep evolving. So
okay.
we'll see. I mean, the last turn of events was sort of a surprise to me as well, so I just try to keep my mind open to, you know, whatever's in front of me and going forward.
Okay. So at what point on the journey did you know you wanted to become an author? Tell us about your writing journey.
It's funny because I had times when I was very sure and I had times of doubt. I started writing stories as a way to get rid of nightmares when I was a kid. I, for
okay.
whatever reason, was a child that had a lot of nightmares, and my mother's advice to me was, if you write your nightmares down, you probably won't have them anymore. And it worked like a charm. But the interesting
oh.
thing about it was I realized that I liked writing just to write things, just to make up stories.
Okay.
So about the time I was 9, I was really getting to the idea that this was something I really wanted to pursue when I grew up. I went to college and majored in journalism and found out that I really did not like writing about real life at all.
Okay.
To me, that was just not where it was at. I couldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. It wasn't interesting to me. So, okay. I changed majors and I decided, okay, so I'm going to pursue something that will actually be a regular career for me and make money. Because to me, I always thought of writing as this sort of pie in the sky thing that probably happens to other people and, not to me. And though I continued writing, I didn't really worry about getting it published. I wasn't worried about anybody seeing it. It was, to me, just a hobby, just something that I did that I enjoyed when I had the time. So life progressed, and a little bit later on, I found myself with some free time on my hands and was just looking around the internet and noticing that so much of the rules for publications had changed, that there were online magazines and that there were all kinds of ways that you could get yourself published that didn't include you being, with an agent and having Simon and Schuster behind you. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I started writing short stories, and I started sending them to different publications and was very surprised that I started getting published pretty quickly.
Okay.
So one of the places that I submitted to was a fledgling magazine at that time called Flashes in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a couple stories for them, and one of them was a story about a girl named Meredith.
Okay.
So I got an email back from the editor at that time, and he told me, I really love your story, and I've been looking for someone that would serialize a story for my magazine. Would you be interested?
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So that was actually how Meredith began. And it was not only a wonderful way for me to be exposed to people and have my work in front of them once a week, but it was great. It taught me how to write for deadlines. It taught me, how to write for pacing and make sure that there was something interesting happening in every episode.
Mm-hmm.
I had my word count
that
I needed to pay attention to. And those were all, more business part of writing that I had never really had to bother with before. So that's actually how Hunting in Closed Spaces started. Eventually, I ended up taking over the magazine, and I pulled the stories offline so that I could rework them and become a novel.
Okay. Now, are you still running the magazine?
I'm not writing for them. The magazine is still up. We still accept submissions. And, we're proud to have a lot of new authors, but a lot that have been around for years, too. We have people that we discovered there.
Really? That's awesome. Okay.
And, so Flashes in the Dark has been around for a while now. I think it's been about 6-7 years or so.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yeah, we're very happy with it. And though we don't publish daily as we used to, we still, we still publish our stories and put them out. I've had to slow down a little bit because of some of my other pursuits, but we're definitely still there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, would you say that you write for entertainment's sake, to share a message, or both?
I would say both. The thing that's interesting to me is I usually start off from a place of what's fun and what's interesting. And I usually don't have so much the idea of the reader in mind, but those are things that come up as you write. I find that I'll start off with a story that has one particular theme, but somewhere in there the message is, things that are my opinions or, things that I feel about the way that people treat each other, those things, topics come up within the story. So it's kind of hand in glove.
And so who are some of your favorite authors?
I have a lot of favorite authors.
Sometimes
they switch up because I'll just be into one thing more than another. Tenerife Dew is a big one for me. I love her books. I love the way she kind of wraps her own mythology into ordinary daily life and makes it seem like it's something that could actually really happen to somebody, even though it's really not. Like a lot of the other horror people will tell you, I like Stephen King and I love Koontz. I think I like Koontz a little bit better than King. And I think that the reason I like his a little better is he fits a little more intimately with the characters.
Okay.
He makes them, I don't know, he makes them a little bit more whole as people than King does. And I think that's possibly because King knows he's going to kill a lot of these people. So maybe he doesn't want to get too close to them either.
Right.
But that said, King is great with his storyline. So, you know, I kind of go back and forth over which one of them I love the best. Oddly enough, I like mysteries too. I love John Sanford, who's, you know, like that hardened detective that, you know, knows everything and can find everything out about you. You know, even trying. So there's a lot of things out there that I enjoy, and I'm always trying to read a little bit of this and that. My Kindle is loaded up right now, and I have about three different books I've been switching back and forth from.
Okay. So what would you say are your top three favorite books for right now?
Let's see. Probably The Shining.
Okay.
Let's see. My Soul to Keep.
Oh, okay.
From Ms. Du. And let's see, who would I say for my third one? And I feel bad because I don't remember this author's name off the top of my head.
Oh, that's okay.
But she wrote a book called The Lace Reader.
Okay.
Which is an awesome book. And there's another one that's sort of magic realism a little bit. And I know that's a fourth, but, you know, since I can't remember the other author's name.
That's all right.
It's called Lava by Pamela Ball. And it's sort of this mystical story about this woman and the man that she loved. And there's all of these references to how love is so destructive sometimes. And just beautiful sort of lyrical writing that you just remember for the longest time afterwards. So I'd recommend that one too.
Yeah. If there was one thing about the literary industry that you could change, what would it be?
I think the main thing that needs to be changed, and it probably really is changing more now that people are self-publishing and people are doing their own marketing targeted, you know, at the readership that they want, is just the lack of inclusion that there is. And it's not only, of course, you know, being a people of color, you're going to really hit your head up against the wall with that sometimes, the fact that certain things are just not included in a general discussion. But even more so than ethnicity and women and, you know, all these different kind of voices that are out there that are not just those white male straight voice. Also the fact that there seems to be a pandering to just certain genres and sort of like the book of the month thing. You know, for instance, Twilight is popular now, so then a bunch of people rush to try to write that, and publishers look for things that are like that. And then the next month they say, oh, it's something else. Now we want fairy tales. Can you write me a fairy tale?
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that eventually is going to go by the wayside. I think it's destructive in terms of creativity to try to push writers into certain things and tell them, okay, you have to write this. And, you know, it's what we want to promote right now, and that's not necessarily what's in their heart to write.
Okay. What is one thing you wish you had known before you published your first book that would have made your journey easier?
What would have made my journey easy? Well, I know for sure that if I had known it was going to turn into a novel in the first place,
mm-hmm.
I would have done it a little bit differently. I probably would have saved myself some trouble in the editing process. But
mm-hmm.
then that's kind of a double-edged sword because it was meant to be a serialized story on the web, so it needed to be written that way. And
mm-hmm.
the way
okay.
that you write a novel is a little bit different than you do when it's just an episode.
Gotcha. Okay. What are some of your interests outside of writing?
That's the thing. I have so few interests outside of writing.
Really?
It's for me, it's pretty much
okay.
reading, writing. I love
uh-huh.
music, so that's one
okay.
thing. And I would say that I'm a movie watcher, but not all the time. I'm not dedicated to movies the way some of my
mm-hmm.
friends are, where they
okay.
have, you know, 1,000 DVDs in their house.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been quite that person either, so.
Okay. Do you have any events or book signings coming up where your readers can come out and meet you?
No, not at this time. That's going to be later on this year. For right now, everything is pretty much nose to the grindstone and working on different things that are in different phases within
gotcha.
A work
okay.
of process. The second Meredith book is being edited right now. And like
mm-hmm.
I said, I have my other sort of secret horror project that I'm not telling anybody about quite yet.
Alrighty.
That I'm working on. So, yeah,
okay.
there's definitely a few things out there. I'm hoping to get out more this summer and fall and actually meet some people and, you know,
okay.
see if I can find some more readers.
Yeah. So why don't you tell our listeners how they can follow you on social media and where your books may be purchased?
Okay. Well, first of all, you can get all of my work on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on Twitter. My handle there is LoriBeth215. I can be found on Facebook, and it is my regular Facebook page. I don't particularly keep an author page because I find
mm-hmm.
that what happens is if you have one that's just the author page, you don't get there as often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
you know, you can come and communicate with me and see all of the things I do, not just my writing there, and also my friends, because I like to rep a lot of my indie author buddies that I have.
Okay. So in parting, what advice would you give to an aspiring author?
I would tell them just understand that everybody's journey through writing is not going to be the same. There are so many people that will tell you, you know, this is the formula. You need to go to 10 conventions a year. You need
mm-hmm.
to put up 365 blog posts. You need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, there's no exact formula for it, and not everything works for everybody. So
that's right.
I would say start with a small plan. Sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, you may only have so much money to do certain things or so much time
mm-hmm.
to devote. But, you know, start off with what you can manage. And
yes.
from there, you know, work on it. And understand, too, that there are people out there, you know, that give 120% of who they are to their work, and they do all the right things as far as marketing and still may or may not be where they want within their career. So
mm-hmm.
just understand, too, it does take an element of luck and, you know, being placed in the right area, but never,
mm-hmm.
you know, feel let down or let yourself have the idea that, oh, you know, something's wrong with me because, you know, I'm not up there with Stephen King yet.
Gotcha.
So never do that, but do what you
yeah.
can to promote yourself and, you know, understand that it's art, so the thing is to be sure that you are happy with your work because
mm-hmm.
when you love the characters and you love the story, it comes through in the writing.
Okay. Those were sound words with our guest, Lori Titus. We have reached the end of our time here. Lori, it has certainly been a pleasure talking with you today. We wish you continued success on your literary journey.
Oh, thank you
again,
so much.
Oh, you're most welcome. Again, listeners, we have had authors Adrienne Thompson and Lori Titus with us today. If you missed any part of today's podcast, you can hear it in its entirety about 5 minutes after the show airs. Thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to support the authors who appear on the show. Of course, if you like what you hear, pass on the word to others. Supporting those in the literary arena is what we're all about. Join me next week for In the Spotlight with special guests, debut novelist Lanice Jackson and author and founder of the Dayton Book Expo, Valerie J. Coleman Wilson, or excuse me, Valerie J. Lewis Coleman, sorry, at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on WALN, the Abundant Living Station. Until we meet again, make each day a great day on purpose. And don't forget to read a good book. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.